Good morning
Love
and welcome
Hope Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this 35th episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, November 1st. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, we address questions you may have encountered on your journey from darkness to light.
Is there really a God? Does he care about me at all?
What is God trying to tell me?
Is there a wrong way to pray?
I feel like I'm in such a deep, dark hole. How can I get out of this?
When I'm in a dark place, who do I reach out to?
Am I following the right path?
Today, it is my pleasure to welcome Bent County Commissioner candidate Jean Sykes. Jean holds a bachelor's degree in business and a master's degree in education administration. She taught business and financial management in southeastern Colorado for 32 years and is current owner of Crossroads Homemade Goodness Catering. Jean has served on local and higher level organizations over the past 25 years and is currently involved in local social and civic organizations. Welcome to the show, Jean.
Thank you, Patty, and it is a pleasure to visit with you and share some information with our audience.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here this morning, Jean, where I think most of us are caught up in the whole political scene, especially on the national level, but I also felt that it was important to draw to listeners' attention the importance of our local elections, because sometimes our local folks are the ones who influence our lives on a daily basis the most. So I'd like to ask you, because I'll be honest, I really don't know, and I am not real political savvy, so you're going to find that out during this show. Share with us, what are the responsibilities of a county commissioner?
Well, first of all, and probably the most important part of being a county commissioner is overseeing the entire budget for the county, which, you know, can be several million at a time. And then there are various individual parts, whether it be social services or in Bent County, we have the nursing home and several other things that are also a part of the county. And the commissioners are actually responsible for what happens with those parts of the entities as well. So it's a huge piece as far as financial. The other things that I think as a commissioner are important is working very closely with state legislators surrounding counties and the federal government, being aware of the legislation that may affect our county, or finding ways that our county can help another county, or it working together in some facet. And also, most importantly, is keeping our county financially strong, looking for jobs and revenue that we can consistently have coming into our county to keep it strong and to take care of the people that are there. Commissioners typically assist all of the different county entities in making decisions, whether it be for what roads may need repair or doing various other new activities, something like that. Then they need to find the solutions to the problems and help those entities either find resources or monies in order for them to best do their jobs. And then probably last but certainly not least that I'm thinking about is the responsibility of the commissioner to handle citizen concerns in a manner that is best for the county in its entirety and not just for a few of them. And each commissioner, at least in Colorado, has a district that they are responsible for. But it is my firm belief that even though I have a district, that it is very important to be representing all of the county and what is important to all of them and not just a certain area. And so I think that that's another very important piece of the county commissioners. And each county would have some different regulations and expectations of their commissioners, but to me those are the basic ones that would be happening with each of the counties in our state.
Wow, that's a big job.
Yes, ma'am.
And like I said at the beginning of the show, and I want to make our listeners aware of where we are. If you're listening from another state or another part of Colorado, you may not have ever heard of Bent County, Colorado, especially if you're out of state. We are in a rural area down here in the southeastern corner, more or less, of Colorado. We're what, Gene, about down here in Los Angeles, I'm about 50 miles, I think, from the Kansas border.
Yes. Yes.
So, we don't look out the window and see the mountains. We get a glimpse of Pikes Peak on Highway 50 on our way to Lahana on a good day. But
if everything is just right, yes.
That's exactly it. I did want to ask Jean, and like I said at the beginning of the show, I am very poor at my understanding of political hierarchy, and I know that's kind of an embarrassing thing to admit, but it's the truth. I'm going to be honest here. I am curious to know, does every state and every county have a county commissioner? At least one?
I would say at least some kind of an entity, and I'm assuming that they would call them county commissioners or someone that is responsible for each part of the county. In the state of Colorado, almost all the counties have three. If there are large enough population in a county in the state, they can have as much as five. So, for example, Colorado Springs might have five in their county, but most of the counties in Colorado are limited to three. And I'm sure that each state, I'm aware of, we have a son that lives in Texas, and theirs is a little bit different, and their expectations of their commissioners are a little bit different. But basically, they're still responsible for the money and making sure things are flowing smoothly. So
very good.
I would say they might call it something different, but it's going to be something similar to that. Yes.
It's right, right. Well, this political campaign especially seems to be just fraught with, oh my goodness, scandal and mudslinging and just all kinds of stuff. And I don't want to in any way on this show this morning try to encourage people to vote for one party or the other. That is not the purpose of this show this morning. I just want to make listeners aware of what they need to look for in a political candidate and how they can differentiate what is the best vote to cast. But I do want to ask you, Gene, in this murky, muddy river of politics, what in the world would motivate a person to dive in head first?
Well, I have to admit, I haven't always been the strongest in politics either. And so this has been truly a huge learning experience for me. And I think part of the reason that most people go in is that they see a need to change something, and they believe that becoming involved in the politics is a way to make that change. And what either, you know, they either think is wrong or that they think can be done in a better fashion. So I would say that that's what most are driven with. And the bigger parts of it, whether it's on the national level, is typically most of those people have taken some political science backgrounds and things. So I think they've already been driven towards that and better understand on the local level. You know, I think there are a lot of different reasons. For me specifically, getting involved in politics was more of a need to just give back to my community on another level. And I've served on a lot of different county boards, having been a teacher for, you know, 32 years and those kinds of things. I certainly have always been a person that's giving back to my community. But this was an opportunity I felt like that I could really make some influences and say thank you to the people who have made me the person that I am. And, you know, I also did quite a bit of research about what it took to become a commissioner, because I'm not the kind of person that likes to just bail in and go, okay, here, I'm going to throw my name in the hat and not know what was involved. So I spent several months researching and then also going to county commissioner meetings just to make sure that I had a better understanding. But I also felt that my previous experience and the appointments that I had had with the boards some of my financial and business background, the fact that I've had leadership roles in a lot of different organizations, as well as on the state and national level, that those kinds of things and my concern for our small rural counties made a perfect fit, and that was the right thing for me to do. And so I think that serving residents of Bent County as a commissioner just allows me to use my expertise as well as giving back to the residents of the county, because many, many of them have played a very vital role in the person that I am today. So that's what motivated me, but I would say most is because they want to make a change of some sort.
Well, it sounds like people have to be very, the opposite of self-centered.
Yes.
My brain just went dead for a second.
Right.
They have to want to, like you said, give back to people and be very willing to give a lot of their time and their energy to the job.
And those jobs are very time-consuming, and I think sometimes people don't realize when they get into politics how much it really takes to be giving, you know, all of that to someone, you know, that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's exactly a 9-to-5 job, is it?
Oh, no. I would say maybe 5-to-9 job.
Yes, 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., huh?
Yes, uh-huh.
Now, when I fill out my ballot, and hopefully I have researched my people somewhat, so what kind of character traits do I want to be looking for in a good candidate, Jean?
Well, obviously, these are just my opinion, but I think one of the most important is someone that you feel has honesty. And, you know, that's one of those things that's a judgment call, and it's certainly something that you have to look and research and find out, because on the national level, very seldom do we actually know that person, and so it's important, that research part of it is important. I think a good politician needs to be dedicated to the job, and we just talked a little bit about that part of it. They need to truly have a loyalty to, in my example, to the county and to the people of that county. And regardless, I mean, if you're a state legislator, you know, the people that you're representing, it needs to be, you need to have a loyalty to them. And one of the things that I think sometimes happens that isn't as positive, but I think is real important, is that we need to be open-minded to new ideas. And sometimes when we've been in legislation or in politics, we have a set agenda, and we're not always willing to look at the whole big picture. And I guess I shouldn't say politics, because that's human nature. You know, we kind of tend to get set in our own ideas. But
yes,
I also think, I think as a politician, too, the other side of that is that we definitely need to have a vision for the future. Just because it worked before doesn't mean that we can't try new ideas or, you know, be open to something different. And so I think you need to know where you want to head people and what is the big picture that you want. So, those, to me, would be important characters.
Well, I think we're fortunate in a rural area like we are, in a fairly, quote-unquote, small population area with our local people, because chances are pretty high that even if you don't know the candidate, someone that you know knows that candidate.
Right, very well.
And
I'll
give you an example. I have a very good friend who you know, Don, who I was talking with just last night, Don Orr, and I mentioned that you were going to be my guest today. She says, "Oh, I know Jean." She's worked with you down at, I think it's maybe at M&M's. Possibly.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, they're right there. And I said, well, I had talked with you at the car show that we had with the county fair this year.
Right.
But that's one of the advantages, is that for your local level people, even if you don't know the person yourself, you're going to probably have somebody in your circle of friends and relationships that knows that person.
Definitely.
However,
and that does make it a little easier in some ways.
Definitely. But on a higher level, on the state level, on and definitely on the national level, you very seldom have any personal knowledge of the people who are running for office. And all you have to go on, unless you're very good at doing your research, is what you see on the TV. And
right.
We all know that the media is very, very, I don't know, they're just kind of, you know, they go for the sensationalism in things, and that's what they're in the business of doing. And you see these ads, well, so-and-so voted for this, and so-and-so didn't do that. And by the time you get done, your head is just pounding with wondering what in the world is real and what is true. So how does a person, Jean, sort all that out?
Well, I believe that probably the most important part of that is to do, again, a lot of your own research. If it is a candidate that has been in the state or the national, you can certainly go to the government sites and find out a lot about what they've done in the past for voting. And, you know, some things like that. I don't think it hurts to use Google and find out a little more about, you know, where did this person come from? What did they do? And obviously, you know, for a small rural community, if someone has only background in large cities, they're probably not going to understand or really do what's best for the smaller rural communities because they don't understand it, or vice versa. So again, you know, their background, kind of where they came from, you know, I guess for me, I would say, you know, I want to look at what kind of jobs or things like that they've had in the past. And certainly, I think we have to be very careful, like you said, with the media and advertising, because they tend to slant things or have a certain bias. And so, or they'll take comments out of context or something of that nature, because that is their business, is to sell whatever it is that they're selling, whether it's a person or, you know, their show that they're doing, mainly because, you know, chaos, if you will, tends to get people watching. And that is what happens a lot of times, is because the more chaos that we can create, the more people are going to be watching our station or whatever the case. And unfortunately, we're all subject to that. You know, if something's crazy on TV, it catches our attention and we watch for that. But I also think that not only do you need to be very well informed, and there are a lot of different ways that you can find out more about the people's beliefs or their backgrounds, and honestly, even people that you may not know very well, if you'll start talking to some of your neighbors and friends, a lot of times they will still say, well, I remember that we talked to them about this through this organization or that organization, and they were very willing to help us or whatever. So those are things that also, you know, talking to various organizations in the area a lot of times, or why are they supporting them? Some organizations will say, hey, we come out and support this candidate or that one. And so those, again, help us to better understand kind of what that person's about and, you know, those kinds of things. But I also think probably for me, and hopefully for the better part of our country, is that praying about our decisions is very important. Sometimes, and I feel kind of conflicted right now on some of the things, but there isn't always a clear answer, as you know, even after you've done your research. And so, you know, does it represent your values, those kinds of things? So I think that praying for guidance and making those decisions and listening to what God really wants us to do is the only way that we can really make those right choices.
You led right into my next question, Jean. Because we this is a Christian show, and one of the questions on my mind was, how important is our faith in not only voter choice, but in candidate responsibility as well?
Well, and I can only speak for myself right now, but for me, faith and prayer are as important as the breathing and eating. And I'm sure not all candidates would say that their faith had as much or anything to do with their responsibility, but I personally, I just don't understand how they survive the stress or fulfill their responsibilities without the help of some kind of higher being. Not everyone believes in God, but some kind of someone that you can say, please help me with. And I'm just thankful that, you know, I do have God to help me. And I think that as voters making choices about leaders that are representing us is really kind of a daunting task because it affects not just us, but our neighbors, our communities, the whole nation. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're following God's will. And I visited with a young lady last night just a little bit, and we were talking about the political piece of it. And she said, you know, sometimes we can't see a candidate specifically that says, yes, this is the right one. But she said, so I have prayed, and she was telling me she had prayed that if whichever person got into, and she was talking about the presidential, that each of the other leaders, the legislators, the senators, all those kinds of things, would be strong enough to help them make the best decisions. And maybe that's the thing, too, is sometimes we don't always agree with the person that was chosen, but we need to continue to pray for them, that all of them as a group make good decisions.
Yes, I definitely agree with that, Jean. I like that philosophy because I'm going to have to do, I have been, and I'm going to have to continue doing an awful lot of praying between now and next Tuesday.
Yes. I, you know, it's been a struggle. It really is. Sometimes there's a clear choice and sometimes there's not. And even all the research just doesn't really give you the answers. And I feel like those are the times that it's even more important to get God's guidance in that.
Definitely. Well, thank you for all of your advice on that, Jean. I think at this time I'm going to just kind of take a little break from the show here and make people aware. Some people come into Blog Talk Radio in the middle of a show and they have no idea who the guest is or anything like that. So I'm going to let you know that you are listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today is Jean Sykes. Jean is a Bent County Commissioner candidate. Bent County is way down here in southeastern Colorado, for those of you who may be listening from out of state or even from northern Colorado and don't know where Bent County is. Jean and I have been discussing this morning politics in general, not so much who to vote for, but how to choose a good candidate, the importance of your local candidate choices. I know the national election is right there in everybody's face and has been for, oh my goodness, months and months now. But we also have to look at our local people and who we are going to choose to govern in our particular area. I also want to bring to your attention that Jean has a website. It is electjeansykes.com, and she also has a Facebook page. I have a website, which is Patty, P-A-T-T-I, Sheen, S-H-E-N-E, all one word, .com. If you go to that website, you will find a website and social media page under my Blog Talk Radio tab. And on that page, you will find a link to the information I just gave you about Jean and also all of our guests. All of our shows are archived. So I invite you to go to the website. And if you missed a part of this show, you can hear it again on the archive. It's the same URL as the one you're on right now. So I invite you to check us out and do that. Jean, the premise of our show is, because it's called Step Into the Light, is for our guests to share with the audience a time when they have experienced a period of darkness and how they came back to light. So do you have a time in your life when things just didn't look so good?
Well, actually, I've had probably lots of dark times, but I will share it with the audience, one particular situation. And it just seemed like, you know, sometimes you have dark times, but sometimes it seems like it goes on forever and ever. And this was a situation, but my husband served in the U.S. Air Force, and we had just been married about 18 months, and Daryl received word that he had to be sent to South Korea. And at the time, I was expecting our first son, and the area that he was being stationed in had neither housing nor any medical facilities to accommodate us, and certainly not with a newborn. So newly married, if you will, you know, less than a couple of years, and expecting a little one, I moved back towards the McClave area. And Daryl headed to Korea, but I felt terribly alone, and I knew it wasn't going to be an easy fact. I did have my parents close by, which helped a lot, but it just never seemed like there was any peace in my life. And I really worried about my husband. I knew the situations that he was facing there on a daily basis were anything but good. I also worried that, you know, what if I never see him again, and I've got this baby, and there just was a lot of turmoil. So to me, you know, well, after our son was born, my husband got to see him for a couple of weeks, and then he was gone for 8 months. And so I felt like I was really, you know, handling the whole idea of being a single parent, and I was also working full-time, and with the stresses of my husband being gone and all those things, it really began to take a toll on me in a lot of different ways. And I can remember praying many a night and crying many a night. And there was times when I just plain old got angry, and I was partly angry at God, and I was partly angry at Daryl because he was gone when I needed him the most. And, you know, I knew that those circumstances were beyond any of our control, but it didn't seem to make things any easier for me or for him. And so after a year of basically being apart, Daryl returned, and you would think that that would be like the most glorious thing in the world, but actually it became probably the most difficult time in our lives or in our married lives. Basically what happened was all of a sudden things I was used to doing all by myself, or, you know, if I wanted to go somewhere, I packed my baby up and we went. I had to learn to suddenly relive with a stranger, someone that was in there, and we had both changed in lots of things that were important to us, and it just seemed like we spent the whole next year doing nothing but fighting. And it was a difficult time because we were literally trying to readjust and live with each other with a baby and, you know, making all those adjustments. And we did, on several different occasions, we considered splitting up, and the road of learning to love and live with each other just seemed like it was more than we thought we could do. But and Daryl and I were very good. I mean, I grew up in a family that always went to church and things, and so he and I certainly went to church, and we were praying, but it just didn't seem like it was really working for us. And so it was a very difficult situation, but there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, I was going to say, please tell us how you got out of all that.
Well, you know, and it was tough. And I'm going to just say that, you know, I grew up in a Christian home, and I learned for the first time during this what it really meant to seek God and His will. And that kind of came about from a lady that came one day, and I thought a lot of her, and she came to visit me one day, and as the conversation progressed, she said, I remember her saying to me something about there is a difference between praying and really seeking God. And I just sat there really kind of confused, and I thought, what does she mean by that? And because I felt like, you know, praying and going to church and even reading the Bible, you know, I didn't understand what she was saying and the differences. You know, I had loving parents. They faithfully read the Bible every morning before breakfast. And I can, now I look at it and I think, what a neat treasure. At the time as a kid, you know, it was kind of like, I'm starving and I want to get done. But but it was something that my dad was a real strong, and I appreciate the fact that he was a great male role model. And, you know, sometimes in families, only mothers take the kids, but Dad was very, very faithful about reading and also doing that. So I thought I knew what I was doing there, but I remember that night after she left, I prayed, God, I just need some help. I have no idea what it is to seek you, but I do know that my prayers alone aren't working. And that was basically my prayer, and I just said, please show me the way you want me to serve you. And, you know, it wasn't instant, and it certainly wasn't easy as a road to get back, but little by little, as I studied my Bible and continued to pray earnestly, and then rather than reading the Bible, I actually studied the Bible, which I mm-hmm. began to see the difference between seeking and just reading or praying. And through that, I began to see a change in myself, which obviously, you know, it's easy for us to say, well, it was Daryl's problem, but it was both of our problems. And so I needed to see a change, too. So Daryl and I began having a lot deeper conversations about our faith and our family and where we were headed and what was important to us, what our priorities were, and you know, our faith, what role it was going to have in our lives. And so I can remember he and I bought a new study Bible, and we began at night before we would go to sleep, began reading and really digging in to what God had in store for us. And I still, from time to time, struggle with seeking God's will, but I also know that those are the times when I need it the most. And I am just thankful for the person that came and said, hey, you know, there's more to it than just reading the Bible or just praying. You need to seek God. And that was the answer, and it was a slow boat. And I'm not going to say that we have a perfect marriage, but we have made it 38 years. So I think that, you know, there's a piece of that, and I would say communication and having God in our lives was the most important part of that.
38 years, that's a long time. I can identify with that, Jean, because we were right at 38 going on 39 when my husband passed. So, yeah, it's a long time to spend with someone, and you do. You have a lot of ups and downs in those years, and thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. It sounds like you really struggled for a while, and you worked hard to get out of it, and I think that's the important thing. Anytime someone's in a dark place is struggling back to that light.
Right, and it's easy to give up, and this would have been easy for us to give up, but both my husband and I have parents that had stayed together all the way through the death of their spouse, and we both still have our moms, but they will tell you, too, that, you know, it was worth the struggles, and it wasn't always easy, but you can't give up.
Well, thank you again for sharing that with us. Jean, you have a lot on your plate with your political career and your involvement in the community and your teaching, and you're involved in the some of the education communities and throughout the state and many different things. And in addition to all of that, you also own Crossroads Homemade Goodness Catering Business. Tell us what your business entails.
Well, I actually like to think of my business as a way to make other people's lives easier. And so I'm a caterer, and I have been known to prepare meals for small groups of maybe 10 or so up to about 250. I do it out of my own home, so I don't have all of the big things that we need. So sometimes it's a challenge to get everything in the ovens and just going right.
Sure.
But I like being able to prepare a variety of foods, so I encourage those that are wanting me to cater to choose something that they like. And it kind of gives me the challenge to try and find new recipes and, you know, do something different. Fixing the same meal over and over gets old real quick. So.
Oh, yeah.
And we have three sons, and I would have to say that they have been very instrumental in helping me create all kinds of new ideas. And I'll all three of them do their own cooking or, you know, help their family with cooking, but they often come up with some suggestions or ideas of something I've already made, and they'll say, oh, Mom, I think if you did this or that, this would be even better. Or they will have tried something somewhere else, and they'll say, hey, Mom, this was good, but I didn't like this or that. Do you think we could recreate something? So I've done a lot of those kinds of things as well. And I like to do that for my customers as well. You know, if there's a certain spice or something that they can't handle, then we find a new way or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but I do love the challenge of creating new things. But I would say one of my favorite parts of my career, my job right now, is creating baking a number of different desserts. And I just love to do it. I created kind of a special red velvet cheesecake.
Oh, yum.
Carrot cake and caramel gooey rolls are usually some of my customers' favorites. So those have been, you know, things that people really enjoy. I have a cranberry tart that this time of year becomes very popular. So
sure.
But
oh, goodness.
That's kind of what I do.
How many people, Jean, can you accommodate at any one event?
Well, basically what I do, I don't have, you know, I have a house and we've done things in the yard for wedding rehearsals or things like that.
Sure.
But depending on what the people want as far as a facility and how far we're going and stuff. But, you know, I prefer to keep it around that 100 at the most. But there are times when I've done quite a few more. And so sometimes you have to figure out ways to farm out the food in different refrigerators until it's time to go, or use some pretty innovative ways to handle it. But we manage pretty well. So,
well, what led you to start the business? Just your enjoyment of cooking in general and your affinity for people and things like that?
Well, I had taught classes for business classes most of my adult life, and I had thought about retiring, but I just kept thinking, maybe in a few years. And I guess it's kind of one of those, be very careful what you pray for, because I had been asking God kind of to show me when the right time was to retire. In my book, when I was praying this, it was like 2 or 3 years, but God apparently said, it's now. And so within a few days of my prayer, God kind of answered that prayer for me, and he said, it wasn't quite what I had in mind, but our superintendent came in and he said, hey, have you considered retiring? Because I was one of the higher paid teachers, and of course they were wanting to cut expenses and some things like that. And I can remember just being totally devastated when I got home that night, and I told my husband, and you know, really shook up, because we knew it was coming, and it was something that, yeah, you know, I was entertaining, but not this soon. And
yeah.
So after lots of, you know, research and soul searching as to what was best for me and looking at our financial needs, my husband and I decided that it probably was the right time, or else God wouldn't have opened those opportunities. And so the question was, because I was still relatively high, I kept thinking, okay, so what am I going to do now? What do I do? And I had lots of ideas. I've always loved retail kinds of things, and I thought, well, maybe that's what I want to do. And then I kept thinking, no, I don't really want to be tied down full-time to it. Because I wanted to have a little bit of freedom. My husband travels a lot with his job, and I thought that way I could go with him occasionally. And we have younger grandkids, and so I wanted to spend some time with them. And out of the clear blue, we were discussing this one day, and my mother said to me, well, why not cater meals for people? And I thought she had lost it. To be really honest, I thought, oh, yeah, right. Because, again, we're in a real small rural community, and so I'm thinking, because I love to cook, I guess I didn't really think that other people may not enjoy that. But I had my doubts. And so anyway, my thought was, is who would even have a need for that? And I mentioned that out loud. My mother said, well, I would for one. And I looked at her, because I learned a lot of my things from her. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you know, I'm getting to the age where I can either clean the house or I can cook the other, but I can't do both because it wears me out too much. And so I retired in May, and in June I went ahead and did this brunch for my mother and some of her classmates. And I was, you know, more than happy to help her out. And I said, oh, I'll just do that, and she'll be happy. And, you know, but I don't see this ever really making a catering business. But I also knew that, you know, something would come along. Well, little did I know that most of the ladies that she had at the brunch that morning shared information with their friends, and within a week or so, I had all kinds of orders coming in.
Wonderful.
And so since I've always loved to cook, I felt, you know, it would be the perfect passion. It gives me a chance to really, with just two of us, I don't get to do the cooking that I used to when I had the boys at home. And so it gives me a chance to do something I really love to do and yet really turn it into a viable business. And I find it rewarding to prepare a dish and know that it's made someone else's life just a little bit easier, or just seeing a smile on someone's face. So it is kind of rewarding in a lot of ways.
Well, that's really neat. I'm not much of a cook myself, Jean, and being by myself now, I don't cook as much as I used to. Although last night I made myself a big, you know, the regular size, I guess, pot of spaghetti sauce. And of course I ended up freezing 75% of it, but that's
because
okay.
It takes forever.
You know. Yeah. But that's okay. But like you, my mom was very big into baking. And although I don't bake it near the level she does, she used to. I mean, she used to do homemade breads and all that fun stuff, which I have never attempted, and homemade pies and all that. I've done pies several years ago, but every once in a while, I do get an urge to bake some cookies or something.
But, exactly.
You know, as far as fixing a big meal and having a bunch of people into my house to eat it, no. That's just not my thing. And it is funny, in the paper, when there's usually a whole section on recipes.
Right.
I generally skip right over it. As soon as I come across a ingredient that I'm not familiar with or don't have, it's like, okay, this isn't for
me.
And I know that's
right.
Terrible. I should really be more creative and innovative and try something different, I suppose. But
well, I will have to say, even for my husband and I, you know, it's easy to get into a rut of what's simple or what you're used to. And at least by having this chance and people asking you for new ideas, you force yourself to try some new things that you wouldn't normally. So.
Yeah. Well, my husband was probably one of the most low maintenance people in the whole world when it came to meals. I happen to love fish. So on an evening, if I wanted to fix fish for myself, I'd say, well, what can I fix for you? Oh, don't worry about it. I'll take care of myself. And he'd be happy with a sandwich or something, you know. He wasn't one of those meat and potatoes every night type of people at all. So I was very fortunate there.
Right.
So let's see if we can tie all of this in, Jean. Do you believe that Crossroads can enhance your performance as a county commissioner, as a small business owner? And what do you see as the pros and cons of small business? Because there are some issues on our ballot that relate to that very thing, the minimum wage issue and things like this. So what are your feelings on that?
Well, first of all, the pros and cons, you know, of being your own owner is, yes, in some cases, or at least in mine, I have some flexibility, but with that flexibility also means that you have to be very well organized and you have to prepare for the unexpected. And even if you're hiring people, the same kind of thing, you may have a big day ahead, but someone calls in sick or whatever. And for me, it's making sure that I have some basic food supplies always on hand so that I can make the things. So the flour, the sugar, you know, those kinds of things that you're typically going to use each time. And, you know, so that you can prepare for whatever might come up or if you just need to go and do something. It's also nice to know that when you're putting all that hard work in, that you're actually doing something that's rewarding to you, both with praise and financially for your hard work. When you're working for someone else, you know, you may get a little more money if you have extra hours, but it isn't the same as that feeling of accomplishment. But coming with that flexibility also means that you're going to have some really long days, and it's going to be similar to what you and I were laughing about, Commissioner, a while ago, in that it's 5 to 9 and not 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you do have lots of hours. So, you know, those are things that are some cons in being a business owner. But I would say that in light of the issues that are concerning us right now, you know, my background both in business and finance as well as owning my own business, I know that there's not a lot of wiggle room there. And so understanding those financial restraints of any small business, and really even today for the bigger businesses, because the bigger you are, the more employees and the same kinds of things are still there, is that the regulations are often set for all businesses, but they many times put really a big undue burden on small, struggling business owners. And the minimum wage is an example of that. And I know that sometimes people, and I always try to explain to my students that if you get another dollar at a minimum wage job, your hamburgers at McDonald's or any other fast food or wherever you're eating is going to go up comparatively. Each of those
yes.
items are going to go up to handle those costs. So your expendable money really is no different. And I think people only look at, oh, wow, I'm getting $12, but they don't realize that, you know, it's going to cost them $13 now instead of $10 for a hamburger or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. So, and what people also don't understand is that as a business owner, when you have employees, there are a lot of expenses that you have besides just for every dollar that you pay your employee. You have unemployment tax, you have federal tax, you have Social Security, you have all of your own business taxes and things. So it puts a huge burden on people. And those are concerns because I really feel like if that particular amendment passes in Colorado, it could very well put even more small businesses out of operation.
Exactly.
And as a commissioner, I believe it is my responsibility, and it's important for me to watch for legislation that has those kinds of issues that may harm our very small communities, whether it's in the farming and ranching area. Right now we have concerns with the water and the speculation of water and wanting to take it to the Front Range, and what that can do to our own communities. And not only is it going to make it a dry area, but it literally could shut down all of our businesses. And so I think it's very important, at least from my perspective, that ownership, and having had my own business, I understand that there's very little extra money to kind of play mm-hmm. with there, that it
yeah.
is important for us to watch those things and to make people aware these are some of the ramifications for making these decisions.
Exactly. Well, thank you for sharing that, Jean, because it's nice to talk to somebody who has some insight into what's actually going on. And I do have a couple of other friends who are involved in a small business and self-employment, as you will, and so such. And, yeah, it does. It sounds great to the employee. Oh, man, I'm going to get $3 an hour more. But when you look at the big picture, it's not always such a good thing.
No, because – you know, you may have, and the people that get hurt the most typically are the people who are right in the middle class or, you know, above that area, because they're not going to get the raises, but yet all of their expenses are going to go up. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, they haven't gotten that extra dollar or $2 extra on their paycheck, so it becomes a vicious circle. So.
Well, I have to laugh when I think back, because when I first started, I worked for the Veterans Administration as a nurse for 25
oh, wow.
years. And when I started my first job, my salary, I still remember this number to the penny. It was $10,601 from my annual salary. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I just thought I was on top of the whole world, you know?
Yeah.
And back
yeah.
then I was. because I was living on the station for, I think it was $16 a month we paid for that room, and meals were provided and all this. And at that time I didn't drive. And when I think that I retired when RVA closed down here at,
right,
oh, probably 50 plus, you know,
yep.
Where's the difference? You know, how come I'm not, don't have all this huge amounts of money saved? It just doesn't work that way, you know?
No, it doesn't, because
change over, yeah, time with the economy.
Right. For every dollar you increase, why, you know, and I can remember my dad talking about his first job and getting 25 cents an hour, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
But he also had, you know, like, he could get a hamburger for 25 or 50 cents, you know, those kinds of,
right,
things, which,
right,
aren't happening either. So really, when you look at that, I mean, it's obvious that the more money you make, the more it's going to cost. So
yeah,
you're really,
yeah,
not gaining anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my uncle owned a small store, we call it a stationery store, back in New York, where I grew up, out on Long Island. And I mean, one of the big drawing cards of his store was the nickel candy bars. You know, he had a whole case of candy, and then he had the frozen candy bars. And yeah, you paid a nickel,
oh,
for a candy bar back then.
Yeah, that'd be all right, wouldn't it? No.
I absolutely, I used to be a smoker. Oh my goodness, I would not be one today with the price of those things. I could not believe.
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
it's
that's
just crazy.
Those are scary, aren't they?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Gina, I wanted to ask you, as we wrap up, you had talked about the very difficult time that you went through with your husband's being away, and then when he came back. And by the way, I just wanted to mention, my sister and brother-in-law were in the Air Force for 20 years. They were in Osan, Korea.
Oh, okay.
For a year. And my husband was in the Air Force as well. So I just wanted to say, go Air Force.
Yes.
But I also wanted to ask you, is there a particular, when you are experiencing a low time in your life, is there a particular quote or a Bible verse that kind of helps you through that? Or don't you really have anything special? Some people do, some people really don't.
Well, I do have a couple of them, and I know the first one probably sounds crazy, but I learned this when I was a young child, and memorization wasn't easy for me, so I loved this verse because it was easy to memorize, and that was Jesus wept.
Yes.
And so it was easy, and it was something, but as an adult, I have found that that verse is very comforting to me sometimes, because I'm not normally a person who cries a lot, but sometimes stuff is pent up in me, and it's like, okay, I have to let something out here. And I'll find a quiet place, usually at night, and I begin to cry, and it helps to seems to kind of help, you know, lessen the burden. And then something about it, you know, sometimes you feel like, well, what am I crying about? But to know that Jesus also wept when things were very difficult for him makes it feel a little better for me. And
yes.
So that's one of the things that, like I said, as a child, it started just because it was easy, but it's become,
mm-hmm,
something important to me now. And then I think the other scripture is Jeremiah 29:11. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord." And, you know, I've given you some examples, but many times I have prayed for something that I really thought was important for me or my family, but God just didn't see it that same way. And he hasn't always let me have those things, which is okay. But I have to remind myself that that was God's plan. And just because I think my plan is the best, it isn't always what God wants for me. And certainly those disappointments come after situations like that where you've really wanted something, but God said no.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tend to say, why? You know, why, God? Why didn't I get this? I'm prepared, I'm qualified, whatever the case may be, but there's a reason. And sometimes, not always, but there have been times when I really have been asking, you know, why? And it might be years later, but God allows me to see later in life why things happened the way they did. And it was simply because he had another plan that was either better or he knew that I couldn't handle it. You know, I thought I could, but maybe he knew it wasn't going to be something, or he knew what was coming down that wasn't right for me. So that's
right,
something,
and
those two verses helped me a lot.
He knows us better than we know ourselves. And
yes,
they always say God's perfect timing is very frustrating for us a lot.
Yes, it is. Because, you know, as humans, I mean, we always think that we know exactly. And it's hard not to say, okay, this, and this is what I'm going to do. But in reality, that may not be what's right for us. And we, you know, we don't understand, but there are reasons. So.
Exactly. Well, Jean, you've shared a lot with us this morning, and we certainly appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our audience before we sign off? We're getting down to just about time for closing here.
I would say probably just as closing that I would ask all of your audience to diligently pray and do your voting so that we do have a say. I don't care who you vote for, but... And also to, on a daily basis, keep each of those people who are guiding our country in our prayers, because no doubt they need our assistance and our support through prayers in each of the things that they have to do regardless.
Most definitely. And thank you again so much, Jean. It's been a pleasure talking with you this morning.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed it.
Well, good. God bless you now.
Thank you.
In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Thank you for joining us this morning. Once again, if you missed any part of the show, you can go to my website at pattysheene.com. Click on the Blog Talk Radio tab and you'll find an archive page there, and you will find the URL for this show and all of the other shows that we have broadcast. Please join us again next Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock, and by next Tuesday it will be Mountain Standard Time because we set our clocks back on Saturday night. God bless you all.